Thank you. My name is Ken Leonhardt. I'm with the Department of Tropical Plant and Soil Sciences, College of Tropical Agriculture and Human Resources at the University of Hawaii at Manoa. And the title of my presentation is Auto Polyploid-Induced Sterility in the African Tulip Tree, Spathodea campanulata. It's Bignoniaceae. I'll just show you some images of the tree. Upper left is a mature tree, and then there's several three shots of flowers. There's not a lot of variation. It's mostly red or reddish orange, sometimes a little bit of yellow in it. There is one botanical variety, Lutea, which is pure yellow. This just shows flower bud, individual flowers. The seed pods at the lower right, and then the individual seeds. They're very light, they're papery, they are easily wind-blown, and so they travel long distances, and the plants are prolific producers, as you can see here. The fruits stand up. Generally, a flower cluster can produce anywhere from 4 to 10 fruits, and I don't know how many seeds are in a fruit, but perhaps 100 or so. So they're prolific producers of seeds, and it's a highly invasive plant. It's one of the most invasive plants in the wet forests in Hawaii, and it's crowded out native plants. And the problem is, well, here you can see a thicket of them just crowding out everything else. Not a very clear slide, but this is the native habitat. It's a western central western Africa, Cote d'Ivoire, Cameroon area, east to Kenya and some other countries. But because of its, you know, highly ornamental, well, there lists some native countries also. It should be on a previous slide. But this is
the native region in here, and all the other dots are where it's been introduced and naturalized and become an invasive plant. It's been spread around by horticulturists because it's a very attractive plant. Doesn't have a lot of pest problems, easy to grow, and it's quite attractive. Wrong way. Okay, just a little bit of a description. Medium-sized tree reaching up to 35 meters. It says deciduous in the literature. It's not in Hawaii. Dense crown of foliage, flowers are red, the plants are hermaphrodite, are hermaphrodite. They're also self-incompatible. Prolific seed producers, cigar-shaped woody pods, they split open into two boat-shaped halves, and the wing seeds are easily blown for long distances. They flower young, 3 to 4 years is what the literature reports. I've flowered them at 2 years. And it's an aggressive tree, and it's a nuisance in pastures, disturbed and undisturbed areas. And it's easily vegetatively propagated by cuttings and root suckers. So those are some of the characteristics of the plant. So because it's such an invasive plant, I decided that, and in talking with landscapers, it's widely used by landscapers. It's used as street trees. It's used as in parking lots. And landscapers tell me they know it's a problem plant that produces a lot of seed and it's an invasive plant, but there's no good substitute. So I thought, so they're going to continue using it despite its invasive characteristics. Well, I decided that if they're not willing to accept anything else as a substitute, perhaps the best substitute would be that same species in a sterile form. And they could plant that without any risk of adding more seed to the environment. So the approach was to produce triploids. Triploids are almost always infertile. Think banana, seedless watermelon. So I decided that in order to do that, I'll create a tetraploid by using antimitotic agents such as colchicine or Risolin, bring some tetraploids to maturity, cross them with diploids, and then you have a triploid with three sets of chromosomes, and which should not undergo normal meiosis because it's not possible to evenly divide odd numbers. So we use a very simple technique of germinating a seedling and then taking a cotton ball and saturating it with a colchicine solution, 0.005%, and we produced a small number of tetraploids.
I'm going the wrong way? Okay. I think you all know how this works. Colchicine interferes with the spindle fiber mechanism that normally pulls. Well, at this stage, you have a double number of chromosomes. They're normally separated, drawn apart by the spindle fiber mechanism to their respective poles. Cleavage takes place. You have two daughter cells with the same number of chromosomes as the mother cell. Well, under the influence of these anti-mitotic agents, that mechanism doesn't work. You have the double number of chromosomes, but they're not separated. You have a tetraploid cell. And hopefully you can create a plant that cell will sufficiently divide and grow and take over and you can produce a polyploid plant. I'm having trouble knowing which way to do this. And that's often the case, but it's not always the case. And so now, how do you know when you've created a polyploid? There's a number of indicators. There's texture and size and of floral segments and also vegetative parts. Guard cell measurements is the technique that I've used for several years, and it's reasonably accurate. However, it really just gives you the ploidy level, the probable ploidy level of the epidermal layer of the plant material. And it's easy to take imprints of these things, of guard cells, put them on a microscope slide and measure them using a scale bar and just arbitrary units. About 25, tetraploid cells are generally about 25% larger than diploid cells. Okay, here's the problem. More commonly, we'll produce mixoploids or chimeras, let's just go through it here. This is a schematic diagram of the anatomy of a meristem showing three different layers, the L1, L2, and L3 layers. One, two, and three layers. L1 layer is where the epidermal cells is the epidermis, usually one or two cell layers thick. That's where your guard cells are. So when we measure guard cells and we say, we have a tetraploid, we really know that we have probably a tetraploid epidermal layer. The L2 layer gives rise to gametes, and the L3 layer, vascular tissue, cortex, and other structures. And often we don't know if we've got full conversion of all three layers. And often we don't know, and often we don't have complete conversion. So we've gone to another technique. I don't know when I'll get this right. Flow cytometry, which will tell you if you have a pure tetraploid or a mixoploid. And it's a simple technique of taking your young leaf tissue, dice it all up, use an extraction buffer, stain it. We use propidium iodide. We run it through a flow cytometer, and stained nuclei will fluoresce, and that gets captured, and the machine gives us a histogram. There we go. Showing that there's a diploid on the left and the tetraploid on the right. This peak, it's a logarithmic scale, and this peak is at the tetraploid level. Look at the data below. We did on the diploid, we fluoresced about 11,000 nuclei, of which 9,700 were diploid, and they fluoresced at an intensity of 40, and the tetraploids at 73. Why would we have tetraploids? Well, that phase in mitosis, where you have a cell with double the number of chromosomes before they divide or cleave off into two daughter cells, is what's measured at that point. So that was a very actively dividing tissue. In our tetraploid here, we had no diploid cells. We had close to 10,000 tetraploid nuclei that fluoresced at 74.6, which is close enough to the tetraploid level in the other plant. Now, this plant I'm going to show you, and this is my last slide. I wonder if I can get this right. I didn't. Okay. This is the plant that we've 07, 05, probably made the treatments in 2005, planted it in the ground as a plant about a meter tall, in 2007. It's flowered now for the last 3 years. The first year, well, let me tell you about the flow results. Okay, thank you. On four occasions we've done flow cytometry work. On three occasions the data showed it's a mixoploid. On one occasion the data showed it's a tetraploid. Unfortunately, I didn't keep track of the locations where I made the, which limbs I sampled. So we know that for the most part it's probably a paraclinal chimera with two cell layers of tetraploid and one would be a diploid. I suspect that the diploid layer is the L3 layer, and that the reproductive layer, the gametes, is the tetraploid layer, simply because the plant has extremely low fertility. And then the epidermal layer, we suspect, is the tetraploid layer because of guard cell measurements suggest that. So a little bit uncertain we'll redo it and keep track of the limb so that when we vegetatively propagate, we can do the pure tetraploid. Anyway, the good news is that it's an almost completely sterile plant. A plant this size the diploid control plants produce 30 to 50 flower clusters. Each flower cluster will produce 5, 6, 8 fruits with 100 or more seeds per fruit, so tens of thousands of seed. This plant produced one fruit in its first year of flowering, none in its second year of flowering, and is flowering for the third time this year and developing one small fruit. So two fruits in 3 years. It's not completely sterile, but it's what we got. It's a very high level of infertility. That's all I have for you. I'll be happy to take any questions that you have. Yes?
Did the fruits produce seeds? And the seeds
grow? Okay, that's the real
diploidy levels of the seedlings.
Yeah.
And you put in a
microphone. Okay. The question was, did the fruit proceed? We only collected one fruit. The other one is still developing on the tree. So the fruit from 3 years ago, we kept the seed. We didn't sow the seed. We still have the seed. It's complete oversight on my part to not do that. I do intend to do it. I don't know if they'll be viable, but we do have the second pod coming on. If the fruit is from diploid, the L2 layer had not been converted, well, I think the possibilities are that it's tetraploid, and if it did, because they're self-incompatible, the seedlings ought to be triploid. That's what I would expect. And if they are, then we may have an even higher a population of seedless plants. But I am somewhat embarrassed to tell you that I never sowed the seed. But we have them. They're on the lab bench. Any other questions? Yes, sir.
Is it very precocious? Sometimes auto-tetraploid, the flowering is just significantly reduced.
Yes. This plant grew and flowered about the same as control plants. We have another plant. It's out of view. It's right. It's next to this plant. It's about half the size. It's a pure tetraploid. Four times run it through flow cytometry. It's a pure tetraploid. Hasn't flowered. It is a stunted plant. We have another one we suspect is an octoploid. It's a gnarly little thing. Same age, and it's only about this big. It's really stunted. Yeah. Yes, sir.
The yellow form, is that a different species, or what did you call it, lutea, and is it as invasive as the orange one?
Okay, the yellow, at one time, it was described as a different species. More recently, it's been included as a botanical variety of Campanulata with a botanical varietal named lutea, and I think that just refers to its yellow color. It does produce seedlings. They do volunteer. It's not as prolific a seed producer, and you don't see it much in the forest, and I think the reason is that it's a very recent introduction. It's been in Hawaii about 15 or 20 years. It's introduced by a botanical garden, Lion Arboretum in Manoa Valley, and just hasn't had time to spread around yet. But okay, thank you very much.